Oh, there's a spooky sprite in here.
Ooh, welcome, foolish mortals.
Oh, God.
This is PCMC Halloween 2020.
This is... Is there another way of saying PCMC?
PCMC.
Picmic.
Nope, that's not a thing.
PCMC. Halloween, baby.
Yes, it's Halloween all month here at PCMC. I'm going to speak like this.
The Vincent Price thing is...
I'm going to talk like this the whole episode.
You're slipping into something else now.
Is it fucking Huckleberry Hound? Well, I'm joined with Anthony Buongiorno.
Hi, everyone.
How are you? Having a spooky Halloween?
Yeah, it's spooky.
You bet.
Super spooky. It's scary out there.
You bet it is. Yeah. This has been a frightening year.
How scary could this Halloween be?
I know.
Isn't Halloween on a full moon again this year?
I don't know. For this episode, we're going to talk about the 2014 premiered,
right?
At Cannes Film Festival in 2014, came out in America in 2015, horror film It Follows, written and directed by David Robert Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
Set the independent movie world on fire. It launched a lot of think pieces and a lot of Reddit threads because it's a film that raises a lot of questions and people like theorizing about it. So let me say right from the get-go, the way we're approaching this episode is complete spoilers. We are going...
Spoiler! Alert.
We are going to talk about this in depth. We are assuming that the listener has already watched the film.
If you haven't, go get it on Prime and then come on back.
Right. Go get it.
It's only an hour, 40 minutes. Yeah. You knock it right out.
Go watch it, then come back and join the conversation with
us. It's fun. It's a fun watch.
I also want to say that I saw this film a couple years ago, and I even taught this film in certain classes. I've got a head full of stuff, and I don't know what are my theories. I don't know what are theories I fucking read in an article. I don't know what theories I took from a student. I have no idea.
I have a few half-baked theories, and then one that I think is a sound theory that I read a few articles about.
Right. There, and yeah, that's another weird thing, is like some theories I think I had, and then I saw other people agreed with me.
I'm also going to come clean and say that I just saw this for the first time yesterday, so I've only seen it once. I feel like I'd probably have a better read on it if I had seen it more
right.
times.
But I think it's interesting,
I feel like I
to have
to watch it again.
Two different perspectives. Yes, watching it again will bring more out of the text for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Did you find it?
Yeah.
Did you find it scary? Because I was creeped out.
Yeah, it's scary.
It's pretty scary. Especially but not a lot. It's like a real Rosemary's Baby thriller.
There's a couple of jumps. There are a couple of jumps.
But it's like in the vein of like Get Out or something where it's like...
Right, right. It's more creepy and depressing.
The score, that synthy score is so good.
Oh, it's this like electronic digital
synth
score.
It's so good.
It reminds you of... kind of like the John Carpenter scores.
Yes.
Actually, it's a lot like John Carpenter's Halloween score.
Like the Halloween 2 synthesized John Carpenter score.
The music is by Disasterpiece.
Yeah. It's really good.
It would be a different movie without that.
Oh, 100%.
It gives it its own character.
It does, because it adds to like the timelessness of it.
Yes.
Which I'm sure we'll get to, but like... Right. They purposely wanted to make it feel like it could be 1975 or 2050.
Right.
Like it's weirdly in the takes place in the past and the future and the present.
Right.
Like
I have my
everything
own theory
they
about
watch
that.
Is black and white, but yet they have cell phones.
They don't just have cell
but
phones.
They drive old cars. Like
right. They drive old cars.
Some of them are dressed like in 70s clothes.
Right. Not only do they have cell phones, one of the characters has
a clamshell
like future kind of phone.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not a phone that exists.
The director says that his number one question from fans is, where can I get that phone?
Right.
And he's like, we made it up for the movie.
And she's reading The Idiot by Dostoevsky on it.
And if you think it doesn't relate.
Have you ever read The Idiot?
No.
Neither have I.
But it relates, and so does the poem they're reading in her English class.
Oh, well, of course.
Yeah, always. There's always that scene.
That scene is also a kind of homage to Halloween and
yes.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes, yes, yes.
Especially, actually, a lot like Halloween, because she looks out the window and sees it.
And then
it.
The hallway stuff is a lot of Nightmare on Elm Street.
Right.
But they're reading Proof Rock by T.S. Eliot.
So, yeah, this is what it's going to be. We're going to jump
all
over
the
place. So if you haven't
seen the film,
you got to
really
watch it.
It is really a lot of fun. It's fun, though. That's the thing. It's creepy, and it's... It was also reminiscent of The Shining at points for me. Like, a lot of those close-ups on Keir Gilchrist were very, like, Jack Torrance-y.
Well, I think in terms of cinematography, it does two things that are very Kubrickian. One is that it has that sort of... it creates an uncanny uneasiness by making things overly symmetrical.
Yes.
Which just... When you have that, I mean, the thing that immediately comes to my mind is in The Shining, the guy with the drink and the fucking blood coming out of his head who's like, lovely party.
Yeah.
Right? He's like perfectly symmetrical and like that creates...
Well, it's even like the pattern on the carpets and stuff.
That tells you he's a ghost. He doesn't have to be like translucent.
Right.
So you've got a lot of that. But another Kubrickian thing is... Kubrick would zoom in and out a lot, and you're told in film school never zoom, always physically move the camera, because if you physically move the camera, you're moving the camera through space, whereas when you zoom, you're just flattening the image. But in this film, it creates a weird claustrophobia by zooming. Yeah. There's also a lot of like panning. Like there's a lot of shots that are 360 going all around.
And they were so effective. The one right in the very beginning where the girl comes running out of her house and she runs across the street and then back into her car and it does like a 360 spin.
Right.
Is like so disturbing because it looks weird, but then you realize later in the movie like she's running from something we can't see.
See, I think... Okay, I was just going to ask you about that. Because now that I've seen it a bunch of times, I think I've seen it maybe 3 or 4 times now, I think, you know, you've got to have watched the movie to listen to this episode, but I guess I'll summarize
Should we give a little bit.
It Follows is about a girl named
Jay
and her sister Kelly, and they, Jay goes on a date with this guy. They have sex, but then he assaults her and ties her up. And he basically tells her, you know, I've got this curse. This thing is following me. And it can look like anything. It can look like someone you know, someone you don't know. It could take different forms. And it moves slowly, but it doesn't stop. And it's coming for you.
He says it's slow, but it's not stupid.
Right. And you transmit it to people through sex.
So people have called this like the STD horror movie.
Which I don't think
it is either.
I don't think it is a...
It's not like a...
Right.
If you have sex, that's bad.
Yeah, kind of I don't think the it of It Follows is meant to be an STD. I just don't. It is very interesting that's how
you pass it on through sex.
But I don't think that's what the metaphor is. And we should say the director has never really liked answering the question of what is it.
Right.
The only thing the director ever really said was he said something like vague, like the movie's about the things we do, that it is probably just mortality and death. And, you know, the movie's about the things we do to try to forget or sort of stave off the idea that we are mortal.
Well, yeah, I kind of, one of the things that I had a lot of ideas throughout the movie of like what the metaphor could be, and like certain things jumped out at me. And one of the things that I was thinking about was like this idea of like gaining knowledge and like kind of like, you know, like eating from the forbidden fruit is like, you know, like coming to like awareness of your body and then coming to awareness of the fact that you're mortal. So like it would make sense that happens through sex, because it's almost like a loss of virginity thing, even though they're not virgins.
No, right.
But it's the parallel is there.
Right. Well, that's we're going to do a bit of a semiotic read on this, which is like to look at all the different elements and sort of try to figure out what they might represent. And one of the things that some people believe is that it's like the loss of innocence or like becoming an adult. Like, it's like, because it's also a movie where there's not a lot of adults. We never see her mother's face, which is another semiotic thing, is why do we never see her mother's face?
It's very, it reminded me a lot
of... Charlie Brown?
No, I was going to say, like, the role of the parents was interesting, because it kind of reminded me of, like, in Halloween, you never really see, like, Laurie's parents.
Not really,
but
no,
then
yeah.
Like in Nightmare on Elm Street, the parents are just so like clueless of what's going on in their kids'
lives.
But
they're also the reason why the bad things happen.
Yes. I found that there was a lot that seemed inspired by Nightmare on Elm Street here.
Yeah. Well, the director has said that he doesn't believe in originality, that he believes in, like, just taking the elements, and you can this is a film that is very much comes from a culture of these other films. Although in doing that, I feel like it is itself somewhat, you know, fresh. Let's call it fresh, not original.
Well, I will, just to add on to like your, so one theory is that loss of innocence thing. What I saw coming across when I was doing like my Google search yesterday was like a lot of people seem to agree that it's about sexual assault and like surviving assault, that like once you're sexually assaulted, you change forever and it follows you forever.
Yeah.
And then there's a cycle of abuse, and then you're more likely to abuse somebody else. And then,
right. And that theory is strengthened by the fact that,
and maybe not even sexual abuse, just abuse in general.
Right.
Like the thing is, not to jump ahead, but at the end, it takes the form of her dad.
Yeah.
And some people say, like, oh, that's her dad was abusive to her and her sister.
Right, I agree, the dad. I think the dad was abusive, too.
Yeah.
Right. We're going to go through all, I wrote down all the different forms it takes. And
it's so creepy that it's just a person walking.
Right.
And it's so scary.
And it's all these different things.
Oh, God, it's so scary. And do you notice sometimes it has, like, sunken in eyes and looks like a zombie and looks scary, and then other times it just looks totally normal.
Yeah.
That is also so weird. The inconsistency is so weird. Like, that big tall guy is so scary.
Quite often it's wearing all white, but not always.
It's so weird.
Yeah. I want to get into all that. But, but most people, the one that you kind of know who it is the end, the last version of it we see is her dad.
But they never explicitly say it.
But they do explicitly.
They show the picture.
But
because the sister says, what does it look like? And she says, I don't want to tell you.
Right. But, well, another thing
is. So that's to say, if you haven't seen the movie, once you have it, only you can see it.
Right. Yeah. The other people.
Other people can't see it, although they can. Like, if at one point they throw a sheet over it and they see a form of it,
which is crazy.
Which means it's a real supernatural thing.
It
that's
is really
there. Yeah. Well, and it bleeds. They shoot it and it bleeds.
Right. Well, you know what? To set the table just once more before we get even deeper into this weird hole, I want to say that when talking about a film like this, you are walking this thin line between figurative representation and how you read something and what you think the diegetic world of the movie is. Mm-hmm. So like, you know,
So in other words, like what exists for them in their universe versus what's just metaphorical.
Right. So, you know, some people get into like,
well, how could it die? And stuff like
that.
They
get caught into the
Don't go too deeply into the weeds on that stuff.
Or like some people get caught in the trap of like, what are the rules in the movie and what is it? You know, is it supposed to really be something in the movie?
One of those people, by the way, is Quentin Tarantino. Did you read that?
No, you can tell me about that. but I think it's much more potent and useful to be like, what do all these things bring to mind
and make you think about?
And not necessarily even, you know, the author's idea, just you as a reader, what it brings to your mind. Why? Yeah. What did Tarantino say?
QT, always with a hot take. He said, he was like, I can't do a Quentin Tarantino impression, but he was just like, I was just so mad at that film because it was so good, but it was never great. And I just wanted it to be great. And he's like, and one of the things is that it broke its own rules 5 minutes in. And he was like, if I were to remake it, I would do this, this, and that. And I was just like, nobody cares. Nobody asked you to remake it. Stop talking.
You would just add more feet and shitty old and shitty old music, you fucking hack. I hate him so much.
Because he was like, okay, so there's a scene where she's first on a date with the guy, with her boyfriend, the one who gives it to her, and they're in a movie theater and they're like looking around at people.
Yeah.
And she says, like, she used to play a game, like, who would you trade places with?
Yeah.
And he's like, what about her, that girl in the yellow dress? And she's like, I don't see a girl. And then he gets freaked out because he realized that it's it.
Right.
And Quentin Tarantino was like, so we as the audience, when we see it, we know automatically it's it. But he who's been stalked by it would confuse it for a real person and then would have to be prompted to realize that it's not it. And I thought it was always walking toward you. So how would he not know? And it's usually in various forms of nakedness. So how would he not know that's...
But it's not always in various forms
of nakedness. And it's also like, but who cares, Quentin Tarantino? Like, it's this willful suspension of disbelief.
Do I have to explain art to you, Quentin Tarantino? Yeah. Are you that much of a fucking hack? Oh my God. What a dumb...
It is interesting that it is very often in various, like undressed...
Right.
Like, when the mother is like naked and attacks her son and has sex with him.
But what's more interesting is fucking what it represents, not what it is in the world of the movie. The fucking diegetic. Why? What does it matter? Why are you trying to find some truth to this
magical
movie? Because
he's Quentin Tarantino, and he's like, you know, it'd be great if Brad Pitt was in it and feet and somebody killed their wife.
It'd be great if I made it suck. By the way, the director has said the rules are painted for us by Hugh, and he's like, Hugh could be wrong. It's just his interpretation of the rules. Because you see plenty of times where it is just standing there, or it is just watching.
Right. There's a part when they're pulling out, and she looks up on the roof, and she just sees it as the in the form of like a naked guy standing on her roof.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it's not walking.
Right. And she's really freaked out.
Right. And it's a really, really freaky image. And it goes great with that synthy score.
And and it's stuff like that that makes me think she and her sister were abused. Also, we see we don't see the mom's face, but we often see her day drinking. So the mother seems to have some sort of alcohol problem.
Yeah.
And there's also...
And she's like, there's something very telling about the fact that she keeps saying to her sister, like, please don't tell mom about this.
Right.
Like, she's protecting, like, kind of like Nancy in Nightmare on Elm Street, like, she's the mother protecting
her and mother. Also, I think mom won't believe.
Right.
If we tell, that's another thing that I think really adds to the idea of it's about abuse, because... it's about, do you believe the person who says that they're seeing it?
Right. And it's also like that goes along with like, do you believe a victim who says they've been sexually assaulted?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's definitely something that happened, right? Because there's a scene where the neighbors are like, oh, there's such a mess over there.
Yes. Which is such an interesting little thing.
Right. Well, there's a lot of
and
weird
it's like
scenes
she's
when you see other people just living.
She's being sharply judged for like being raped, seems like.
Right.
Like, it's the douchey neighbor who she ends up sleeping with later.
Right. Who never believes her.
Who never believes her. He just wants
an opportunity to fuck her.
Yeah. And then he's with a girl who's like, oh, they're such a mess, that family. Like, you get the sense that, like, they're the trashy family or something.
Right.
And it's like, well, maybe that has to do with the dad, because the dad's not around. We don't know if it's a divorce or if he's dead or what happened. But it's so interesting because in that moment, she's, like, talking to the cops about her assault.
Right.
And she's being judged for being a mess.
Right.
It's
right,
just
exactly.
So... Ugh. It was
right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Let's talk about can we talk about do you think so there's some interesting theories as to like so that she sleeps with this douchey neighbor and then for a few days he's like nothing's happened, man, like it's whatever, and then he says like whatever she something probably happened to her but it's not what she thinks happened,
right,
which is a very like
right
you know like Brett Kavanaugh defense,
right
and then he gets killed 3 days later. There's an interesting theory that like he slept with a couple of other people. And that's why it took 3 days to come back to him.
Right.
Because the thing is, when you sleep with somebody, it always kills the last person who slept with and then goes back up the chain.
Right.
And I do think that in that scene, there's a scene that's suggestive of like that she goes into a boat to have sex with like three guys.
Right.
And I think she did.
Right. Because the next time you see her, she's got wet hair.
Yeah.
And nothing else is ever said about
it. No.
So some people think, oh, she wimped out. Some people said she fucked them. And by fucking them... She kills them, but she also buys herself a little bit of time.
And it also, if you connect it to like the sexual assault thing, it's like interesting in that it echoes like that thing of like victims of sexual assault sometimes try to find comfort in promiscuity later on.
Right.
And then are judged for that. So it's like a cycle of abuse and judgment.
If you have it, or if you have the it following you, it's a weird thing because if you fuck somebody, they have it, but then... If you don't tell them, it will just kill them. They won't even know to be worried about it
so
coming.
So tell them and tell them to pass it on so that you buy yourself time.
Right. But it's also a weird thing, too, because in the beginning, the guy Hugh, which isn't even his real name, he fucks her, but then he chloroforms her and then ties her up and then he tells her about it. And it's like, did you need to tie her up in her underwear?
Yeah, it's so weird.
Because it's
why did he even chloroform her?
It's so clearly...
And then
figuratively
he's like,
a rape, even though it's not.
He's like, I got to show it to you or else you won't believe me. Maybe that means that he's tried it with other girls who've just been killed really quickly because they didn't believe him.
Right.
Because he ties her up and he has her in a chair and he like shows her it coming toward her.
Right.
And he's like, if I didn't show you, you wouldn't believe me.
Right. But it's why does he do it that way?
It's so upsetting.
It's super weird.
Yeah.
It's super weird.
I also was really drawn to, from the beginning, I was like, there's something going on here about like the suburbs and like a false feeling of safety in the suburbs.
Sure.
And then later on in the movie, there was that dialogue where that one character was like, my mom never let me leave the suburbs.
I could never
and then
go past 8 miles.
They drive through the city and you see like, you like urban decay is so scary to them.
Right. I have a theory. I actually have a theory about that.
I couldn't formulate a theory on it, but it did strike me as like there's there's something similar to Nightmare on Elm Street about like the false safety of the suburbs here and like white flight into the suburbs.
Well, so my theory is, and I guess this is not a figurative thing. This is me actually trying to figure out the reality of the world. So I'm pulling a Quentin Tarantino, I guess. But all right, well, the thing that people often kind of immediately notice is it's timeless. You don't know if it's in the future or the past. You don't know what time of year it is. People are wearing jackets with shorts. People are swimming, but then also are cold.
Right.
You have no idea when
you
it is.
You also don't get the sense clearly of how old any of them are. Like, is she in high school or college? That's never really made clear.
Yeah, it's very unclear.
Yeah.
So obviously that creates an uncanny weirdness. But
she's in a pool, but then it also seems like it's fall.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. You really don't know when it is. And again, like, there's the old TVs and the old cars, but then like the futuristic phone and stuff.
Yeah.
So obviously that creates a really uncanny, weird feeling for the audience. It puts the audience at a sort of unease.
Right.
But I actually do have a theory that it might be something actually within the world of the movie, which is I think it might be a future after a huge depression.
Okay.
Because not only do you see old TVs, like in her living room, she's got an old TV on top of a broken TV. They all have old cars. When they're driving around, you see tons of abandoned buildings.
Right.
I have a feeling it is the future, but it's the future after some huge catastrophic event. Maybe it's a depression. Maybe it was a war. I think it's a dystopian future, but
that is a wrinkle that I didn't even consider.
I think it's a dystopian future, because when you really think about a dystopian future, right, it doesn't have to look like Hunger Games. It could just look like
now
our world just shittier.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, look, there's no denying.
Drive around right now and look at all the boarded up businesses.
Right, exactly. And I think that's why you've got old things, because I think you've got a weird economy of like just we're using what's around. Also, like, you know, like the kid Hughie squats in an old house. Like, ownership is a weird thing in this movie as well. Well, it's all weird. Everything has a sort of dream logic.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. It kind of reminded me of like a little bit of like All That Heaven Allows, where like like the idyllic 50s suburb facade.
Right.
And the darkness underneath it.
Right.
And it's kind of like, you know, like I think Wes Craven talked about, like, I keep going back to Nightmare on Elm Street, but like,
I think that's
Nightmare on Elm Street, like he said his idea for like Nightmare on Elm Street was like a suburban street with like a claw coming down on top of it.
Yeah. Oh, certainly, because this, you know, the suburbs are, it's a sort of microcosm of what this whole country is. This whole country was, you know, taken from its indigenous people, and the suburbs quite often are urban areas that white people came in
also
and either gentrified created these
suburbs. Are artificial.
Right,
they're not
exactly
real. Like, cities are real. Rural areas are real. Suburbs were like created mid-20th century to create like a third space for people who like just didn't want to be around urban decay, quote unquote. And it was just really white flight out of the cities into these little areas that were just like weirdly, you
right,
know,
exactly,
like the weird culture of the suburbs. I don't know what I'm getting at there, but I think it was definitely on the filmmaker's mind too, because there's that scene where they talk about that.
Right.
And the idyllicness of the suburbs and the fact that like the aesthetic of it is like it all looks so perfect, like the little boxes.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, it's,
and also like the idea of whatever happened to her dad.
Yeah.
Or what
did
her dad do
to her? The darkness
is
just
like
hidden.
You know, watching it this time is the first time I realized they were all childhood friends.
Yeah.
Which also ties into you not knowing how old they really are.
And the kid, the one friend like kissed her and this, there was a lot of
weird.
Oh,
fucking Paul.
I bet somebody could do like a real deep dive into like the relationship between the sisters, because it seems like the sisters, they both kissed Paul, and then they both seem attracted to Greg at different times in the movie. Like, it seems like the younger sister wants to sleep with Greg, too.
But
maybe they both did. Because then later
she
on,
says
she casually says, oh, I've had sex with him before.
Right.
And it's like, oh, well, that's weird.
Well, I wrote this down because I was like, what does that mean? There's a scene where Greg takes them to his lake house. And like, she's like learning how to shoot a gun. She's shooting at the main protagonist. She's shooting at like cans and stuff. And where is it? Greg says, it sucks sticking around when everyone's gone home. In that scene, that makes no sense what he's saying. They're all hanging out together. No one's gone home. Who is he talking about?
Yeah.
And then
there
she,
were a few lines I feel like that, like, I was like, that's kind of odd. Like, it doesn't seem to fit.
Well, it's that dreamy thing. They yeah. also, all the actors have a sort of disaffected, it's a very sort of monotone.
Yeah.
Everyone's sort of really playing it very subtle. And then she says, it's a bit lonely. And then he says, I'm right across the street, you know. And then she says, I remember. And then he says, I guess I should have been nicer to you.
So does that mean that he sexually assaulted her?
Maybe. Because think about this, too. He doesn't believe it is real. And then she sees him walking down the block and then realizes it's it looking like him. There's a yes. couple of...
He comes to kill himself.
Right.
Well, not himself, but like it comes down looking like him to kill right. him.
There are two... There are actually two moments where...
Wearing all white.
There are doubles.
Yeah.
Right? There's that really...
The friend, Yara, is a double at one point.
Right. She's... And it's a real fuck you to your brain because she's swimming in the lake and you see her. And then in the next shot, you see her walking in and you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You just... Your brain does a quick like, wait, no. Is this a continuity error? Yeah. And then... But it is always just walking plainly. So you're like, oh shit, that is it.
That's what's so scary about it is that it always just like... Literally just walks into frame.
Right.
It's just so... And then the music just gets louder gradually. And it's just like so scary because it's this idea that like no matter where you go, it will always get to you eventually.
Right.
That's what's so scary about it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so scary. I'm going
to go a lot of, also, there's also a lot of... I wrote down all the different forms it takes. But then there's a lot of like questionable it's that you're like, is that it? Is that not it? Well, and then there's just weird shit like the two boys who are always watching her. Who yeah, well, are the that, two oh, little
well,
boys?
There's that
are,
so much there,
right? Obviously,
too. Like,
well, it's a
stalking.
It's stalking. It's yeah. an invasion of her privacy.
Right.
It is the male gaze.
Right. I want to go back to what you said though. When you were like, "Oh, Paul, do you not like Paul?"
Paul is. Oh, I hate Paul.
See,
Paul and Greg are no different. They both just want to fuck
just,
her.
Paul,
he's just
is
like,
a
I'm the nice wolf guy.
In sheep's clothing.
Right? He's Mr. Nice Guy.
He's trying to have sex with her through the whole thing.
Right.
But what's interesting though is not to jump ahead, but like in the end though, I feel like them walking hand in hand is presented as like a win for her. That like, okay, well at least Paul's in it with her.
I don't
Unless
know if
it's
it is
like well, now they're both doomed because he just wanted to have sex with her so badly.
She seems like she's just really fucked up at that point. You know, at the end, they quote unquote kill it, but you don't really get
no,
the idea
I
that they really
that.
Do.
Well, you know, when they're walking at the end, there's like a figure walking behind them.
Right, exactly. Which we know
could be it or not.
Well, the director says you can interpret however you want, but they did. The director said we shot it three ways. One where it was really far, one where it was right behind them, and one where it was in the middle distance. So he clearly was thinking about it when he was
right.
creating that shot.
So do you think then that that's... Because I read one article about it where it was like, that's her breaking... It was like basically saying that like Paul was a good person and that she finally like has a companion in Paul.
No.
And that's good. But I was kind of more
He's
with you
person.
Where like I felt like Paul... Especially because there were so many like lingering... Jack Torrance shots of Paul
yeah.
looking at her where I was just like, oh, Paul just wants to have sex with her. And then I feel like at the end, it's just like him being like, oh, well, was it worth it?
Yeah.
And then there's him driving past the prostitutes and you assume like, oh, well, now he's just going to try and pass it on to somebody else.
Right.
He's just going to. And it was never about love for him.
Right. Well, because it's a completely laughable scene where he comes in and he's like, you know, I want to help you, so let's have sex, and then I'll have it, and then you
right.
can pass it to me. And this is after she's already passed it to Greg.
Right.
She kind of... I like what happens with Greg because she uses him, because she knows that he doesn't believe her, so it's kind of like, you don't believe me, and I know you don't believe me, so I'm going to fucking give it to you.
But, well, yeah, and it's also like, you're kind of like, well, good, because you see her wake up after having been attacked, like in a hospital in bandages, and she looks over at him and it's like, he's just ready to go right away.
Right, right,
so
right.
she's like, you know what? If you really want to do it that bad, like, let me just give it to you then.
Right. And you see
But
her,
then I think she feels bad about that.
Right. Because she knows he's going to die.
Yeah.
But then Paul comes in and he's like, yeah, I'll take it from you. And she even says like, okay, you want to help me? Like, it's fucking ridiculous. And he's clearly like up both of their asses, the sister and him, and it's yeah, I did
it's a
not
good performance,
like him
though.
No, he's a great performance.
Marshall from United States of Tara.
Oh, of course. Let's not even get into that show. no, it's the
all
the
performers were
great. No, it's great. It's just that character is
he
written
is,
to
you're
be
right. He didn't sit right with me.
But that's another...
At one point I actually was thinking to myself, like, is he gonna be it? Like, is he evil? Like, I really was like, I wonder if like at the end there's gonna be something where like signs point to him being like...
There are some
because people- they do go back to where they first kissed to try to... Almost like it all started with that kiss.
Which
is like the loss of innocence. He's like, remember when we had our first kiss? And that's where they go to have the big confrontation with the monster.
Right. Oh, there's so much unpack there. Right. Well, I haven't heard. There is some... while Googling around, I found a pretty deep Reddit thread where somebody tries to make the point that Yara is it. Which Yara clearly is like
a side
outside
character
of everything and often looking in, often commenting on things.
And farting.
but I don't think it works that way.
Well, Yara is also sort of like the narrator because she's reading The Idiot the whole time.
Right.
And that she has the last lines of the movie where she's just reading the last
She's
lines
also the only one with that kind of weird future clamshell phone. So I sort of read her as having more money than the other kids.
Maybe there is something to like she is like almost like an orchestrator could be.
Maybe.
But then she's also the only one that gets shot.
Right.
Could also, you could argue like, well, she got shot because she's part of it.
Right.
And that's why that character gets punished.
So much to chew on, and they
accidentally shoot her.
Right. Well,
that seems weird. Where they're gonna put a bunch of electronics in the pool
to electrocute it.
Yeah.
The director has said it's a bad plan.
It's a horrible plan.
He's like, this is a bad plan.
Well, that's what I was thinking of when Hugh said it's slow but not stupid. Yeah. Like it comes in and immediately just starts throwing all the shit at her in the pool.
Right. Exactly.
And it's like, oh, well, you weren't expecting that to happen.
Right. Exactly. But so that's. Is that where they first kissed at the pool?
Yeah, he says he looks up at a picture of her in the pool, which is a motif, her swimming through the whole movie. And he looks up and he goes, hey, Jay, do you remember where we had our first kiss? Mm. And then it cuts to them going to the public pool. So that's where they kissed.
But you know, the dad would bring them there because Yara says, I haven't been to the pool since I was a kid. And he was like, who brought you there? And Yara kind of like hits his arm like, no, shh. And he goes, oh yeah, okay. Like, don't bring up her dad.
Oh, I didn't even.
It's a very subtle, you know, like, don't totally bring that up.
That, I missed
and
that.
It takes the form of the dad
in the pool.
In the pool. Yeah, and you just said it. Water is also a sort of sign that keeps repeating. Mm-hmm. Well, in the very beginning, it reminds me of two things. It reminds me of, in the very beginning, we've got this girl who, she's like the first girl. Kind of like
she dies on the beach, right by the water.
Right. Which is smart because she is sitting with her back to the water. So it's like, we don't think that it can swim or come from the ocean. So it's like the perfect, like, where you can back yourself up to. And she's also weird because she's like wearing high heel red shoes. But
like hot pink pumps.
And she makes that circle, which I'm not sure what exactly she's gaining by making that circle run in front of her house.
And then there's that weird, like, faceless neighbor who's like, are you okay? You need help?
Yeah. But when she dies, you see her like...
Her leg is snapped
back. She's like twisted up. It reminded me... of Jaws.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of the French classic Au Chant Andalou. I'm definitely saying that wrong. The short film directed by...
You're an Au Chant Andalou head?
It's that... You know it. It's famous for having a shot where a woman has her eye split open with a razor.
Ooh, yeah.
It's directed by Luis Buñuel and Salvador Dali. Okay. It's completely non-narrative. It's just a work of art. I think it's 21 minutes. Because that movie also ends at a beach, and it's like these weird, like, disfigured forms on the beach.
I think that just, like, it's a smart move visually, is that, like, her wearing those, like, hot pink pumps doesn't seem to fit with, like, it's the middle of the day and it's the suburbs. Like, she looks like she just came out. She came back from, like, a night out or something.
Maybe.
But then when you see her body, her one leg is, like, bent back over her head and you see the shoe there is so recognizable.
Which is weird because when we see it kill someone later, while it touches you, it kind of humps you and then, like, your skin begins to boil where it's contacting you.
Yeah.
Like, there's a scene at the end where it grabs Jay's leg and you see, like, a burn on her leg.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, why the snap? You never... It's interesting. By the way, going back to...
That girl also kind of looks like the protagonist.
Yeah.
There's, like, a vague, like, resemblance between them.
Yeah.
I also... Can I...
Yeah, please.
Throw out another... For a minute there, I was thinking, like, is this... metaphoric for, like, addiction?
Why you say that?
Because I just felt like not every time, but very often, it looked very, like, strung out.
Mm.
Like somebody who's, like, high or, like, is a really bad addict and is like going through something.
Well, many of the forms of it have sunken in, like sunken black eyes
and like torn clothes and like just came back from like a bender or look like.
Right.
So a part of me was like, is this like about? I was, I mean, like, that's tying it to the suburbs thing. I was like, is this about like the infiltration?
Well,
of,
the kids
like,
are always drinking
drugs into the suburbs.
You, whenever you see Paul, he's drinking out of a flask. Like the kids are always drinking, and of course, her mom is always drinking. Let's see. So semiotics is the studies of signs and symbols. So I just sort of I feel like a text like this really lends itself to like almost like a game, like a fun semiotic, reading. So I just want to ask you some semiotic things. And then we'll get into all the different forms it takes. Jay has a tattoo of an X on her middle finger on her right hand.
Was that always there, or does that happen after?
Oh, I don't know.
My thought was like, is she looking at that because that happened after she slept with Hugh?
Well, I don't know. There is that scene before. Well, no, that's after.
Unless I just missed it.
But what could that mean? I mean, X
marks the spot. I mean, that's the obvious one. Like, X marks a target.
Right. But it's on the middle right. So it's not on the wedding finger. Also, typically, I mean, people who actually have an X tattoo, it often means they're straight edge, like they don't drink or do drugs. Mm. It's just weird for her to have it on her finger. So that was one. All right, let's talk about the neighbor kids that are always watching Jay. There's a weird, that's also like that's Kubrickian in that Kubrick would do doubles a lot.
It's like two middle-aged boys that like look almost like twins. And what's interesting is that, okay, in the beginning you see them watching her and she says, I could see you.
Right.
And then they like run away. Then later on, after it has been following her, somebody throws a ball at her window and you assume that it's it, but then you see the kids outside her window.
But so like, it's like, it's the second floor. Like the kids have, like the kids went from like, we're peeking at you from our yard to like, we're really like, really looking at you.
And then I was thinking like, so then was that it taking the form of the kids?
Oh, maybe.
Or was that... are you supposed to be confused because like she's just like a victim of the male gaze all over the place now?
Right.
Because it's like she's being stalked, taunted, tortured by people who want to have sex with her and take something from her.
Right. Yeah.
Entity, like the entity like has sex with you.
And the kids are wearing red. I read somebody say, oh, it is associated with red, but I don't think that's true.
No, I would say white.
I don't see that. Yeah, white.
I feel like
often.
Very often they're wearing white.
Yeah.
Like the one, when it comes as Greg, it's wearing like long johns. It looks like a Mormon.
Yeah. Often it's wearing like pajamas.
Yeah.
Or like bedtime clothes. It's often barefoot.
But that's why it's so uncanny, is that it looks like just like somebody like wandering out of bed.
Right.
But it's so menacing too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so scary because.
And it's like you don't even know if it's it until it does something violent.
Right.
The one part when Hugh's like, do you all see that girl? And he freaks out.
Yeah.
And that's actually a funny scene. They're like, we all see her.
That's funny. Yeah. The only expression it ever really has is determination. There's one scene where it kind of screams, and then there's a scene where, as Greg's mother, she kills him.
Yeah.
Which I think the mother sexually assaulting, killing the kid is another. Her dad.
At one point, it takes the form of like a goblin looking thing, but only at one point.
When?
When they're like hiding in that by the lake house, when they're in that like little shed, and then like they kick the door in, like it comes in with like a weird looking deformed head.
Wait. Okay. So it's a little kid with he's wearing white shorts and a white tank top, and he's got like a scar on his face, and he's got red hair, but. You see him again in her neighborhood riding a bike. When they're leaving to go to the pool.
Oh my God.
He rides up. And that I never noticed
so
this
scary.
Before. He rides up and then he sees them. And you can read it as he stops because they're backing out. But he literally rides up and then stops and watches them. But then in the next instant, it's on the roof as the naked man. But I watched it more than once. That's got to be the exact same kid.
It's weird. I'm like, I'm getting creeped out talking about
it more
than when I watched it.
Because
there's
it's
so much.
It's so
I do
rife
feel like,
with meaning.
Yeah, like you'll watch it again and you'll see a lot of, you'll notice a lot of stuff that you didn't notice.
I mean, like,
the image
when you look
of like,
at somebody's
that
clothing,
naked guy standing on a roof is just so upsetting that it's so scary.
Because it's also, the expression seems to be so determined. And also you think about her being abused and the fact that
but
it's
also
naked.
Like sort of nothingness. Like, the Michael Myers mask of like blank.
But I find that one more aggressive. There's a sort of
it is
especially because it could have killed her or jumped on her but didn't.
Right,
and it's also like I know where your home is. I was at your home.
Right. Like, I was just standing on the roof.
Yeah.
Which is so weird.
What do you think of, there's a scene where they track down Hugh and we find out his real name and stuff.
Yeah.
He lives with his mom. And we see Jay is picking leaves of grass or blades of grass and she's putting them on her leg and there's five. And I'm wondering, just the way that she lines, I mean, it's something, it's a sort of idiosyncratic thing that a person does, especially if they're dealing with trauma. But there's just something about the image. Did that do anything for you?
It did. But what really stuck out to me more in that scene was Paul looking through the old play porn magazines after, like, one scene after him talking about them, looking at them as kids.
Right.
And then a picture of Hugh being neatly tucked inside of one.
Right.
Was very odd.
Well, I think that's more of just Paul is, he's not what he
he's
says
like a
he
creep.
Is.
There's something about him that's like, he's a creeper.
He's
creepy.
He's a true creeper. Yeah. Because he's always looking at her too.
Always.
He's always looking at her.
Yeah.
Yeah. He. Yeah. That also could be a reference to Jack Torrance reading a Playgirl. Although I think sometimes people overblow that because I know it sounds weird by our contemporary standards, but you know, like Playboy and Playgirl did publish actual articles and stories, so it's not so insane.
Oh, it's insane that, for to be reading on a job interview.
Right. But it's not so insane that it might be on a coffee table in a waiting room.
Okay.
At that time. Maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
Water. We see lakes. We see pools. We first see her in a pool. What can water mean?
Well, listen. I mean, I feel like this has been done to death. I feel like when I teach, I talk about this because water shows up in so many things. And it's always like it's the duality of water brings life, but water is also very destructive. Right. So it's like water is both life and death.
Yeah.
Water is both cleansing, but also can drown you.
Okay.
Water is what we produce when we cry. I mean, it's just like there's so much you could do with
it's
water.
It's interesting. You're saying this like it's so rote, but I've actually never thought
about
it.
Oh, really?
This.
I just feel like it's just like rain. Like it's always,
To me, mirrors are the biggest one. Especially when I would teach film classes.
See,
like
that's not a lot. In literature, because that's so visual.
In film, whenever there's a mirror, it's like they're reflecting
on themselves.
Like
in literature, when it's water, it's always like, rain is either cleansing or rain is like, oh, it's a stormy day. Something bad's coming.
Right.
It's like something that has like a dual. It's like a dichotomy. Like,
right.
There's two ways of looking at the same exact thing and they're exact opposites. Mm.
It's also a connection to her past and her dad.
Yes. Because he brought her to the pool.
And she swam.
You get she was a swimmer. They never actually say it, but you right. get the sense by the end that like, okay, she was a swimmer. She finds peace and solace in the
right.
water.
Yeah.
And that she even has pictures in her room of her in the pool.
Right. It's odd.
It is odd. It's odd because like it looks like it was just taken in the prior scene.
Right.
By somebody watching her.
There's also a scene. Have you thought about this? There's a scene towards the end where
she drinks the water out of the
yes
out of the right out of the tap right after she gets attacked.
But did you
and
know?
And looks down in her underwear, which is like really to me is like oh sexual
assault.
Sexual
assault, absolutely. And then that's when the red ball hits the thing, and you see the kid was watching her.
Yeah.
Did you notice it's only like a short shot, but in the end her pool is destroyed?
Yes. Weird. I was wondering about that.
I don't know. Supposed to be it did that or
I don't
what?
Know. I was like, part of me was like, did I miss something where like they destroyed the pool to try to
well, you also don't know how
keep
long
her out of
the,
danger
the whole story's taking place.
Yeah. That was a weird shot.
Let's talk about the forms it takes.
I'm getting a little scared.
I know. It's spooky. This is what Halloween's
spooky.
About here at PCMC. So, well, all right, the first time we hear about it is it's a girl in a yellow dress. Hugh points it out and then she doesn't see it and then Hugh knows that's it. Then we see Jay and Hugh at a diner and it is walking outside and it's a stocky man in black. So those two...
Oh, that's... Okay.
You probably weren't even thinking of it at that point in the film.
No, I was. At that point, I figured like that must be the it that follows. But I'm thinking like, there probably are some shots, aren't there, where like it's an extra, but you're supposed to be questioning whether or not
it is it.
Yeah,
there's some questionable it.
So it's like we're not 100% sure that that's it. It could just be a guy walking.
Okay. No, you're right. You're right. I read it as that.
Okay. Obviously, the thing is like the idea is like you always feel like something's coming for you.
Right.
And like that's the whole point is like of the last shot is like you don't know whether the person right behind you is
exactly,
it or not.
Exactly.
Right.
So those are the only, if you count the second one as it, those are the only ones that are Hughes. Now he then has sex with Jay, and for the rest of the film, all the its we see are for Jay.
Right. And the first one is a woman, a middle-aged woman. who's like kind of naked.
Yes.
She reminded me a lot of like The Shining bath.
Right. And yeah, that's when she's tied up and Hugh's trying to explain it to her. And he's like, look, see this. And that's, of course, that's striking because that's the first nude it. And it's like, right. Why is it completely nude? Does it make choices of what it wants to look like? Or does it reflect something in you? It's funny because it's a movie that has a lot of sex and nudity, but it's not sexy or arousing at all.
And it's also, part of me was wondering, like, is it, when it takes a form, like what you just said, is it reflective of something that we don't know is really scary to that person? Because she's like immediately screaming. Granted, she's in a state of trauma. But there's just a naked woman walking toward her and she's screaming, screaming, screaming. So part of me was like, is that like her mother? Is that like her first grade teacher?
Right.
Like, is it someone to her that's really, is it her grandmother? Like,
it takes the form of her dad at the end. So yeah, there's got to be some consciousness.
There could be an argument for like every time you see it, it's something to her that's really scary.
Right. It's a boggart or whatever they call it in Harry Potter.
Right.
Yeah, so it's a fully nude woman walking.
And it's like really scary because they're in like a, where are they?
They're like, it looks like an abandoned.
And he's weirdly walking around in a circle off camera while he explains it. Right, you don't see his face and he's playing with a flashlight. It feels very dreamy and scary. Right.
It's super weird. It's super weird.
Yeah.
The second form it takes for Jay is very striking. It's an old woman. It's an old woman with white hair.
Who looks like she's wearing a hospital gown, it looks like.
Okay, yeah. And she also has black socks. Mm-hmm. And it looks like either she has shorts that you can only see on one knee or she has a knee that's wrapped up. And she first sees her out the window in the classroom, which is the scene that's like Halloween.
Yeah.
And then she's in the hallway, which is the scene that's like
Nightmare on Elm Street.
And, you know, you hear the, which is very John Carpenter
so
music.
So scary, yeah.
And So what is that? Is that her grandma? Is it?
That's what
is
I'm
it,
thinking.
Is like, it? People look at that one as an indicator that is death or mortality because it's
an old
woman.
Well, that's the thing. Like, and that's, you know, like not to. People have said like it shouldn't be read as an STD, but I did for a minute think like, are these like people who are like, you know, like for a second I was just like, are these people like dying of something?
Okay, yeah.
Like, because they sometimes look like they're on, like, their end stage dying of something.
Right. Well, also the like, fact that they're, like, often in, like, loungewear means something.
Yes, it reminded me of, like, remember in Ryan Murphy's film adaptation of The Normal Heart?
Yeah.
Like, the people, like, as the film goes on, the people who have AIDS become, like, terrifying looking.
Yeah.
Like that. Oh, like, yeah. Oh, this is my fear, this is what I'm going to look like.
Yeah.
And that goes along with, like, she's a young girl and she sees an old woman.
Right,
and it's
right,
like,
right.
Oh, my God, I'm eventually going to be her.
Going to be that.
Yeah.
Right. She's the oldest version of it you see.
The scariest one to me is that really, really tall guy
the
in a white
man.
T-shirt. Yeah.
Right.
Who just comes out of behind her friends. It's so fucking scary.
Wait. I want to go in order because the next one we see is in her kitchen. And this is the one that everyone says, this is a movie about abuse because it looks like it's just someone who was just raped. It's a woman with no shirt. She has a bra half off with one boob hanging out. She's actively peeing herself.
Yes.
She has fucked up teeth like somebody punched her teeth out.
Yes.
And she has sunken in black eyes.
Yeah.
And this one very clearly looks like a victim. That's also what's so scary about it because she doesn't look like the aggressor. She looks like, it reminded me of like the little girl ghost in Sixth Sense. Like it's a victim.
Well, that's the thing that's, you actually put into words what I feel like I've been missing, which is really what makes it so scary is that they look like people who have just been attacked and yet they are
the attacker. Right.
And so it makes me wonder, like, are they all various representations of like victims of abuse, you know, because like there's elder abuse, there's child abuse, there's rape, there's all, and they all could fit into those boxes.
Yeah. I mean, this woman clearly, some
and
of them are naked,
just the
but
idea
this
that
woman
anybody
is,
could be abused,
at
any time.
Yeah.
And like that elderly woman, she could be like being abused in her nursing home or whatever, you know?
The fact that she's actively peeing
is so.
Right, because it's a sign of submission.
Right. And yet
also
she's
an homage
aggressive
to The Exorcist.
Yeah.
Right, and yet it's being aggressive. And just the face looks mangled, like she was like raped and
just
beaten
punched
to death.
In the face, yeah.
Right, I think the first time I saw that, I thought, does it take the form of like, thing people it's killed?
That's what I was thinking. Like, I thought at the end,
is it like become you?
That's what I thought at the end, you were going to see it to somebody else and it was going to look like Jay and it was going to be like, oh, well, this is the chain. This is what happens.
Right.
Once it gets you.
So that's what it looks like in the kitchen. And then Jay, her sister, and Paul run upstairs and hide in her room. And then it changes. Yeah. There's a couple times where it changes mid scene. And that's when there's a knock on the door and they're like, go away. And it's Yara, although she's like, it's me. And you're like, you don't believe it. And then you open the door and it's Yara. And this is one of the biggest
jump scares.
This is one of the biggest jump scares. It's Yara. And you're like, oh, it's Yara. And then like the whole background is dark. It's completely pitch black. And then from the back, you just see this giant man walk behind her. And he's even got that thing that people who grow that big are where like his neck looks like it's bent one way. Mm-hmm. And he's got sunken in eyes and he's got a kind of a white t-shirt that's sort of
they all are like in various stages of undress or loungewear or pajamas. Even later on when it's Greg's mother, she's wearing like a nightgown.
Right. With one boob hanging out.
Yeah, it's weird.
And so that's a big,
or
huge
naked.
Jump.
Or
right,
totally
right,
naked.
Or totally naked. Yeah. Right. Yeah. The tall man is the one that really freaks people out.
Yeah. He's scary.
It's just a great jump scare. It's because you kind of feel it coming, but it still gets you.
You know it's coming.
Because also with the uniqueness of this film is you don't know what it's going to look like.
But that's what's so brilliant about it is that it just looks like sometimes it just looks so ordinary that that's scary. It's just like a middle-aged guy that's naked standing on a roof. But it's like so not threatening, but just weird looking.
Well, sometimes you don't know, is that it or not? But then there are some times where it clearly is it because it's standing out in some way where it's nude or it's a big tall man or it's a kid with a scar on his face. Like, so sometimes you like immediately know that's got to be it. Mm-hmm. Like with this guy. And it's also because Yara can't see it. So it like it's so close to her. She doesn't realize that she's in danger. Although she's not, because it won't kill you. Unless
that's what I was wondering, like, is she gonna see somebody else get killed by it? And then for a second I was like, well, that's weird. The stakes are interesting in this horror movie because it's only coming for the one person.
Right
Because there's a part where you see like five people running from it and it's just walking after her.
Right. Also at the end in the last scene when it looks like her dad, Paul is pretty close to it and trying to shoot it, and it's just still throwing shit at Jay. And it is close enough that it could hit Paul,
but doesn't
ever try to.
Right.
It's like Jaws, like the Leviathan. It's like just single-mindedly, I'm just coming for you. And I'm going slow, but I'm
kind
coming.
Of like, it reminded me a lot of like, it seems like it borrowed a lot from Night of the Living Dead.
Oh yeah, the slow moving.
Like slow moving, and I've got my singular motive as I'm coming to get you.
Right.
And that's
it.
Like a shark, like you said. Like,
but you know, you think about like, what if it did go down the line? Where does it end? Like, where's the original sin here?
Well, did you read about like the proposed sequel?
No, I didn't.
So there's, I hope they don't make it because I think that's going to make the world too much of like a concrete thing.
Yeah.
But he has said that his only idea for a sequel would be to flip everything, and it would be called Follow It instead of It Follows, and it would be about Jay or somebody else trying to track it back to its origin and following the line backwards.
That's too much like The Ring, I think.
Yeah,
that's
like, but it's cool ring. That the whole everything would be flipped, including the title.
Yeah. No, I don't like that. Let's not do that. So the next It is a possible It. It's when they go to Hugh's school to try to figure out who he is. We see a student. She's got jeans, white sneakers, a white shirt, and a white jacket. And this is one, some people say this is it because she's walking. There's a 360 shot. We see, and then we see her again outside. But this is a questionable it.
Yeah, I don't even remember this one.
Yeah, you'd notice it, I bet, the second time you saw it. Mm-hmm. The next it is Yara. We talked about this before. Yara is swimming. She's got on, the real Yara has on a blue one-piece swimsuit. She's in a tube going like, come swim. And then we see another Yara in a white shirt, blue shorts, and she grabs, and this is where she grabs Jay's hair, and you see Jay's hair like come up on
its
own.
Yeah, it's so weird looking.
Yeah. And that is a weird moment because that's when you realize, like, other people can corporeal.
Like, yeah, like other people could see it move and manipulate objects.
It, like,
because then it throws a chair. And that's when Paul's like, well, the chair didn't throw itself. Like, something was there.
But that's interesting because Greg sees that and still doesn't believe it. So that could be something about, like, even when the evidence is there, some people don't want to believe it.
Yeah.
So in that same scene, after Yara's outside, they run into, like, a garage to hide from it. And that's when we see, for 1 second, it looks like it might be the tall man again. Mm-hmm. For the giant.
Yeah, he does. He walks by for a second.
Right. But then it's the little boy.
It switches, like, 3 times in 2 seconds.
Then it's the little boy who we just talked about with the red hair and, like, the scar on his face.
That's the only time it does, like, a menacing thing where he, like,
screams
and growls, it seems like.
Right. But I think he appears again later. And then when they run out of the garage, she runs into a car to drive away, and it's not Yara, but it's another brunette woman.
Oh, I thought that was still Yara.
I read it. It could be. I read it as another. So it's often. Sometimes it's so
far
indistinct.
In the distance that you can't even tell. Yeah.
Then we have Greg. It looks like Greg in white, like Long John's, to kill Greg.
And for a minute, she's
she thinks it's Greg.
And it's like my feeling was like she was thinking like, oh, Greg's coming home from just having sex with somebody.
Right.
But then it starts
banging on the door.
On the door, and that's when she realizes, like, oh shit, that's it.
And that's also a remix of Heather Langenkamp and Johnny Depp.
Yeah, there's so much Nightmare on Elm Street.
The first Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah. Because he's right across the street.
And then she runs into his house and we see it's his mother. And it looks at her, which is interesting because it recognizes her.
But it's not after her now.
Right. Because even Hugh says, I still see it.
Yeah, you could still see it, but it won't be coming for you unless you're next on the list. Which leads you to believe that girl in the beginning must have slept with Hugh.
Oh, maybe.
And
then
it was coming for him again, so he had to sleep with somebody else to pass it off. And that's why So it's like he spends his whole life, like, romancing these girls just to have sex with them just to push it away.
Right.
So he's like a serial abuser.
Right, exactly. But also under the guise of, like, I'm doing something good, kind of. I'm going to help you.
Right.
You see various forms of abuser.
She's like, oh, he's a nice guy. And she's like, yeah, I think he's a nice guy.
Well, it's like Paul.
Which is like, where did he come from? Where did she even meet him?
Right.
It's weird. Yeah.
Yeah. Paul, too, is a form of abuser. Like, it's the various forms that abusers take. It's like we both saw the new Invisible Man. And what I think was so clever about the movie is when we finally see the Invisible Man, we've heard that he's this monstrous guy, but he's not. He's like this. He's like, he's meek and he's stuttering and he's like, and you imagine him to be this aggressive monster, but then you realize this is, sometimes abusers look like that.
Yeah.
So Greg's mom, then she jumps on him and like humps him, and it's very incestual and it's very, I think it is either figuratively or within the world of the movie, it has something to do with, I think, her dad abusing her. Some people don't see it the way. Some people think the dad committed suicide, but I think there's too much. I think there's abuse there.
Well, yeah, I read something where it was like you could read it as the dad was the only stable figure in her life. And now, like, he was a really good guy.
Right.
And now it's like her life's fallen apart because her saint father is gone. So it's like so funny how it could go either way.
But when she says, like, don't tell mom, I have a feeling like there's a history of mom didn't believe something.
Yeah. I also got the feeling that it was just like, don't tell mom because mom's a disaster.
Right, of course.
And mom's just going to drink herself into a stupor if we tell her something. That's stressful.
So then we see it as, I think, the little boy again on a bike. Mm-hmm. But then just a second later, he's the naked man on. Now, some people believe that this is her grandfather because it looks a little bit like a guy we see in a picture in her house, but I don't think it's the same guy. I don't read it as her grandfather, but it is another naked man.
Yeah.
Just sort of, and there's something aggressive about a naked man, just like with his dick out, just standing there. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, and the way he's looking at her, it's very aggressive.
Because he's like a middle-aged or
and
older
she's a teenager.
Guy. And
yeah, she's
a teenager.
A kid, yeah.
Right.
So then the last form.
But that's the thing, too. It's like, but that, he could also be, that somebody who looks like that man could also be abused. So it's like,
right?
It can. It at the same time, it looks like an abuser and somebody who's being abused.
And some
abused.
People who are abused then abuse other people.
Right. Well, yeah.
It
it's
can
a cycle,
be cyclical,
which
like
is that
way.
The chain, like of it follows. Like you
right,
pass
right,
it on
right.
to somebody. Then
right.
Well, it sounds like we're really both in agreement that it's like about abuse, but a lot of people don't even agree with us on that.
Yeah, I feel like so much of the imagery and theming to me says abuse.
I think it being about mortality and like we're all gonna die is just too simplistic.
And it's also every horror movie is about that.
Right.
I mean, there's got to be something to the fact that it's transmitted through sex. Or contact like that.
Right. Because even then when it kills you, it like has sex with
right,
you.
Right, right.
It humps you.
Right. So the last form is clearly her dad, because we're shown the picture even after that scene. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of, it's indicated to the audience that was her dad.
Yeah, it's not easy to miss that. It's right in your face. Like they want you to see that.
Right. And she won't tell the sister what it looks like, mm-hmm. which you get the idea of her protecting her sister, which is something else she may have done before.
Yes.
And in that scene,
do you think her sister was abused as well, or was it just her? Do you think she took the abuse to protect her sister?
Maybe.
I was thinking that there was going to be like a Kafka-esque metamorphosis thing at the end where like her downfall was going to be her younger sister's uprise, and it was going to end with her sister, like, you know, like in Metamorphosis, like at the end, like,
I've never read Metamorphosis.
Okay, so like he turns into a cockroach, mm-hmm. and then like his meek sister, like by the end of the story after he dies, she's like beautiful and lovely looking, and the parents for the first time are like, oh wow, Greta is really grown into herself. Mm-hmm. So it's like she like took his life force, kind of a thing.
Interesting. The sister serves ice cream with Paul.
Weird. I got the feeling that Paul was like had sex with the sister as well.
Well, there's something there. And he's always with the sister.
Yeah.
And then the last scene, we see Paul and Jay walking hand in hand. They're wearing a lot of white in this scene. Mm-hmm. And in the middle distance behind them, someone is walking. And is this it? Or are they just giving it back and forth to each other? Because what happens when you're monogamous? Do you just give it back and forth to each other?
That's a good question.
This time around, I figured out how to do it. Like, if you had it, like, how you could survive.
Well, people have said, like, you just gotta, like, move to another country and wait for it to walk there. But that's...
Yeah. What if it gets on a plane? No. Here's what you do. You organize a huge orgy. It's got to be like 50 or more people.
I'm listening.
Right? But you make sure that these are people from all different countries. They all have to be from far off places, right? And then you get in there, you fuck one of them, and then you get out. And then they all have an orgy. And then like, all right, some other people die. But it's you're just giving it a lot of busy work.
But you're
it's going to go all over the world.
But that's defying the rules, though.
I know.
Because, well, it's...
I was just thinking defined, this time around, what would I do?
Like really realistically. But it's also... I think there's something about it being passed in an intimate moment.
Right. Oh, you're saying an orgy can't be intimate?
No, I'm saying like intimate between two people.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just thinking about it because there's no real way out of it, because if you do what Hugh did, it's crazy and nuts. I mean, either way you do it, you're putting it off on somebody else. If you just do it and don't tell the other person, you're only buying yourself a few days.
A little bit of time before it comes to kill that person. Instantly. Right, because they don't know. And it's like, who told him?
Right, right. How does he...
Or did he just figure it out? It's so many unanswered questions.
But how do you figure it out without being attacked?
I want to go back to right before he chloroforms her, the stuff that she's saying is really interesting. She's talking about like when she was a kid, and again, it's like lost innocence.
Right.
When she was a kid and she'd see people like parking.
Yeah.
And she'd say like, I always wanted to be that, like a little kid wanting
like
to be
adult.
Older. But it's like, but she's like, but not the sex part, just like the being in a car holding hands with somebody
just
part.
Being an adult. Yeah.
And then right after he chloroforms her.
Right.
So it's like,
she's also playing with a flower on
the floor. Which is so, I mean, that's like hitting you over the head with like innocence.
Yeah.
So it's like, to me that also reminds me of like Where Are You Going, Where Have You Been by Joyce Carol Oates, like this whole idea of like young suburban girls like growing up too fast, mm-hmm. kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And like just like what she wants is the cute stuff. She has to tolerate the sex to get that.
Mm, yeah.
And so it's like it's almost like, and it's weird because they just had sex when she says it. So it's almost like she's saying in a way like, I didn't really enjoy what we just did, but that's what I have to do in order to be close to people.
Right. So if you read that first sex scene in that way, and then the second sex scene, she's like looking away. She's clearly not interested in Greg.
Right.
Then none of the sex she has
is enjoyable to her.
Right. Or of interest to her.
Right.
Do you want to talk about the idiot? I mean, I saw a lot of people go, oh, the idiot isn't, but I don't know.
I don't know that much about it.
I just read like the Wikipedia of it, and I know it's about an innocent person that people think is an idiot because they're kind. And I don't, how does that relate? I don't know.
Yeah, no. I think to me, the thing.
Well, there's a speech from the idiot that Yara reads, gives.
Yeah. To me, I was more struck by the proof rock, the T.S. Eliot
section. Tell me about that.
Well, just because that's, you know, that poem is
very stream of consciousness, and it's like famously hard to nail down what it's really about. And there's a lot of talk in it of like coming of age and realizing that you're old, and he realizes that he's like not attractive anymore to young girls. And I think it's parallel in that way, that it's like there's a lot of ways you can read it, and it has something to do with sexual appeal. Just like, you know, whenever there's something being read aloud in a classroom in a horror movie, it always indicates something.
Right, the director even said as much.
Yeah.
You know, it's always English class, because then you always can be... And it's not even just horror movies, it's everything.
Everything, yeah.
I just watched Easy A, and it's like she's reading The Scarlet Letter. Yeah. It's like, it's such a big part of what happens.
But what's funny is in Easy A, she makes fun of that.
Right.
That trope. In Halloween, are they talking about? I can't think of it.
I don't know, but it's something about death.
Yes, I think it's Shakespeare. I can't think. I might be wrong.
In A Nightmare on Elm Street, something really interesting happens, which is scary, which is she falls asleep in class, and then the teacher's just sort of mumbling.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? What is happening?
That's so weird.
That's a good movie. First Nightmare on Elm Street is a good movie.
But you know what's funny about that? You and I, we went to see that, remember, with an audience at Brooklyn Academy Music?
Yeah, yeah.
And we...
Everyone was sort of laughing at it. Yeah.
But I don't think they were laughing at it. I think that there are parts of it that are funny that when you watch it alone, you don't get how funny, how over the top some of the adult characters are.
I think some of it is...
You think it's bad acting? Because
I think
a lot of people were laughing at her mother,
right?
Because she was just like such an irascible drunk. But I think that it might have. To me, I was like, I think that actress is making a choice.
Right. Well, even on the audio commentary, which of course I listened to, Wes Craven was like, "Yeah, she's in her own movie."
Oh well, then okay.
Yeah,
it kind of reminds me of like the mom
was
bad
with tone in those early movies.
The mom in what's that movie with the camp? The mom who's
Sleepaway
like
camp?
Angela, like right. The crazy mom who's like,
oh yeah, yeah. Oh, it's nuts.
I am a doctor. Yeah. Like, really, like, surreal, strange performance.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's something to, like, a lot of horror movies, or even, like, you see it in Stranger Things, like, I think. I mean, I only saw the first season, but there's always something about, there's always some kind of commentary being made about, like, the parents don't know what's going on in the kids' lives. Like,
right.
The kids, teenagers live in this world where they still have to answer to parents, but they're not really living in the same reality as their parents. And their parents are often like just so clueless about like
right.
how knowledgeable they are of the real world.
Right, even though
they treat them like they're little kids. Like, does that make sense?
And you've got the one parent that's like hip and she's a single mother. She's very much like the mom from E.T.
Yeah.
That's Winona Ryder's character.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like we've really explored it, but it is really good.
Yeah,
and it packs a punch in 100 in short. Yeah. It's only an hour 40. I mean, it's a short watch. I was like, oh, I'm gonna start it now, and I'll finish it later. And once I started watching, I was like, oh, I'm just gonna watch this whole thing.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful film. It looks great. It sounds great. The cinematography is great.
The score is so good. It would not be as good without the score.
No, the score adds just a whole nother level of, and it also adds it adds to the when is this? Because
it's got an 80s right. sound to it where it's like like I'm not doing it justice, 80s, but it's like synthy,
right? Yeah. But then also the future and the past and
yeah. What do you make of like not to dive back in, but like the fact that they're always watching like old TV shows? I know you said earlier that maybe it's like a post-apocalyptic
But that wouldn't really support my argument, because why would they not be? Why would it only be? Why would it only be black and white?
It makes me think of like in Halloween, like they're watching like movies from the 50s on TV. Right, right. Like, what is that about?
Well, you always see that. Like in Scream 2, Sarah Michelle Gellar is watching Nosferatu. I don't know. It is odd. And they go to see Charade in the beginning.
Yeah, that's
right. And there's an organ player in the theater.
There's like a Nickelodeon there.
Right.
And I was like, what the hell is going on here? Like, is this just like a weird little town? Or is this supposed to be normal?
I think it's normal
to them.
Is this
like a kitschy night out for them? Like they're hipsters? Or is this just like normal?
Didn't look like that.
Yeah, that was weird. He was like of a different time. Like he was just playing a piano.
You know, since we're talking about that, that reminds me of... They're playing that game, who would you trade places with? And Hugh says, him.
The child.
And she's like, why the child? And he's like, he's got his whole life ahead of him.
Yeah.
And that could go to that point of like, aging and, mm-hmm. you know, because it's similar to what she says. She talks about being a child and as a child wanting to be an adult. And he's an adult talking about wishing he was a child again.
But here's the thing that's interesting, too. If we really like lean into this read of it as like a metaphor for living alongside trauma. Mm-hmm. He seems like he's at the point where he's learned to live alongside it. Because he's like going on dates with her. He yeah. seems like he's enjoying a conversation with her in the diner. Like, it's almost like the stage that she's in is the early stages where you're first traumatized.
Right.
And he's at the point where it's like, this is just him managing it.
And he's also,
he's just like remarkably not scared.
Well, he has a house where he puts it. Things on the windows so yeah. it will make noise when it comes in.
Yes. Like, this is just like, and it makes you wonder, like, has he been dealing with this for like 10 years?
See, I read that
and he just moves from town to town sleeping with girls.
I read that as the difference between how abuse is seen in men and seen in women.
Okay.
Not what it really is, but how it's seen. You know, he it's there, but he can ignore it or just be a tough guy and try to forget about it.
And also, it seems like his mom is very, like, unfazed by the fact that this group of strangers comes looking for him. And they're like, hey, yeah, he's here. You want to come in? Like,
because he lives there and he lives
like
in that other house.
She's used to that, though.
Right.
Like, maybe she even knows that this is what he does. Like, right. he just goes and finds girls to
also,
victimize.
Also, is his backyard a soccer field? Like, they're in the back of his house, but then we see that girl walking. There's just so many weird dream things where it's like, what is anywhere?
Yeah. It is weird. Because it's like, at first I thought I was like, when they said like, oh, his real name is this, whatever. I was like, oh, he's like a drifter. Like he's, but then he just lives in a nearby suburb.
Right.
But on then, the other side of town.
But then what was he doing with that house where?
I don't know. It's weird. I don't know. Because he does have like a nice suburban house with his mom where he lives.
Right.
But then he's got like a house in the inner city that looks like
abandoned. And that's where it's all set up where every room has more than one exit.
Yeah. It's so weird.
I mean, it could be a comment on how with gender, like society often asks men to ignore their pain more than women. You know, women are often not believed.
Yeah.
But men, it's sort of like, oh, just shut up about it. Just man up. You know, okay, don't, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, think about even now, like when men are sexually assaulted, people like make jokes about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that it's so, I mean, sexual assault is underreported to begin with. And sexual assault of men is like crazy underreported.
I just read this nonfiction book about the history of TV movies. And there's a movie from the 70s starring Paul Sorvino. From
being Mira Sorvino's dad.
Yeah, I was gonna say Goodfellas, but okay, that too. And it's a comedy called
A Guy Who Got Raped.
Right, and it's called Couldn't It Happen to a Nicer Guy.
Oh my god, that
and,
is awful.
And it's a wacky comedy about a guy who's raped by a beautiful woman. And whoa, what do you have to complain about, buddy?
Oh my god,
it's. By the way, the whole thing's available on YouTube if you want to check it out.
I'm not gonna watch that. What a different time.
I know.
Well, what I mean, that's
not different enough.
I know. Well,
this was PCMC. It follows. If you haven't seen the film and you got this far in the episode, what
what are you doing?
What even were you doing?
Go watch it.
Yeah.
I hope this film doesn't ever get a sequel.
Oh, please. No, I'm it hasn't so far. So
good.
Yeah, let's keep it that way. Anthony, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Where can you find this pod?
Thank you for asking. This podcast is available anywhere podcasts are found. That is Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, I think now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's always new places that are opening up to podcasts. Yeah.
And of course, radio.com.
Radio.com, of course, always.
The official website of radio.
You're right. We always make fun of radio.com, but if I showed you, I'll show you one day, like, there's even smaller, weirder ones that, like, we are on.
Huh.
And if you listen to us on one of
those. Are we on SiriusXM?
No. Anthony, thank you for being here for this spooky Halloween.
It's been spooky.
Ooh, thank you for having me. Spooky. All right, everyone. We end every episode by saying, go bye-bye.